part of this day's session, the symposium as well. Before I continue on, I do want to thank Uncle Lewis for a lovely warm welcome to Kaurna Country, as I'm from the Anangu-Yadda land, so I'm a visitor to this area, but I've been living here for quite some time now, but often go home as well. My presentation is called Area 1B, which is Poison, Leave It. I do have images of people who have passed, so I hope I don't offend anybody with those images there. I guess it's a story of our family story, of what happened to our family and how we have carried on the legacies that have been set before us, not only from these amazing old women, but also Dad's story as well, who was such a leader in getting the story out about what happened to Aboriginal people as well. Thanks, JD, for allowing me to come and talk about Dad's story and to share a little bit of the Leicester story of how we continue on to fight this fight, of course, which is not always an easy one. But I do want to pay homage to this amazing crew of my grandmothers and aunties who were so instrumental in my life in grounding me as an Aboriginal woman, but also just, you know, the great work they did back in late 90s to 2004, talking about the first proposal of a nuclear waste storage facility on country, and these women really led the campaign in the early 1B campaign, and I'll talk a little bit further down the track as well. So of the women there, all have passed except one, which is Gumby Emily Austin, who's standing on the left-hand side. So they've left us with a job to do. Nana always said to me, Nana Gumwater, who's sitting down in the middle of the ladies that are seated with the black beanie on, Nana Gumwater always said that I had to take it on. And I guess having her say that, and also Dad reminding us of that history and that story, we have to continue on to educate this country and talk about these stories, whether it's through art, as we've been hearing, or through oral history. And I think that's where Dad and Nana Gumwater Mob came in, was really sharing the oral history story and really keeping the story alive and ongoing for the future generations as well. So I will talk about Dad's story. I'll talk about those tests that we all know that happened in the 50s and 60s, and Dad's stories, of course, is in relation to Emu Fields, or Emu Junction, back in 1953 when that test went off there, just south from Wallatina, where Dad's resting now. Talk about Nana Mob's campaign and the Yeradiwandi campaign. Talk about the Royal Commission, of course, which was kind of a big part of my, I guess, taking on Dad's story and Nana's story to this Royal Commission that was run. And just the fact that we continue to stand strong as Aboriginal people and the next generation, but we do that together with many people in this room that are a part of this journey as we fight against governments who come up with some great ideas of not knowing how to store waste and the pressures that we are dealing with today as well, with two locations in our state of South Australia. That great photo of Jesse Boylan taking of Dad is just a classic photo, and it's beautiful that it is being out there shown and shared to everybody as well. And as I mentioned, Dad's story you know, is such a well-known story of him talking about what happened. It is a human rights issue. It is a story that he wanted to really get out there and let people know that his people were impacted badly by these British nuclear tests, and in particular the one at Emu, which was on the 15th of October 1953, and he recalls those days of what happened, and I guess it was really, you know, how his life really changed as well. I think we look back and I think of Dad growing up as a young girl with Dad's disability. As a young girl, I didn't realise until later in life, I think I was 10 when the Royal Commission was happening, when I realised that it was those tests that had taken Dad's sight away, and that we, he'd never seen us, but he knew us by voice, he knew us by touching, and, you know, as we grow up as well, he's grandfather of 12 beautiful grandchildren, and two great grannies as well, who he got to meet not so long ago as well before his passing. So his whole world completely changed. He grew up on country, learning the oral history, generation to generation, passing on those stories of our elders and from his elders as well, to that particular dark day when the black mist rolled and, you know, the ground shook back there at Waiatata, which is his country, his traditional Yankunyata lands as well. Another classic shot, which I love because this particular photo that Jesse took is a photo where Dad's story sort of comes from. The Nindap Water, which is a part of the Parenti story, which is a big story that zigzags through our country and travels from the west and comes to Waiatata, where he takes the grinding stone and then journeys all through country creating song and dance. And it's that particular location there that Dad, of course, is at home at his Nindap Water, and he's resting just further north from that location. But it was there where, you know, the black mist rolled that you could see that travelled through across that country, across Nindap Water, up to where the main camp was as well, which is not too far from where the old homestead is now. We still live out there on country. We still have that family connect there. Dad is resting there, as I mentioned, and he's, you know, his story will always be told and shared to others, by others as well, who will continue to get his stories out there as well. I just wanted to read a little bit of a part of the testimony and the transcript from the British nuclear test when just Dad recalls that particular day when people first got sick, my eyes got sore, I couldn't open my eyes. I got juri, which is diarrhea, and a rash on my skin. I remember this. I remember this happened. My mother asked me to stay in the shade. Because I couldn't see, I was led around with a stick, like a digging stick. You hold at one end, the person ahead of you holding the other end, and you follow along. I didn't have the stick for long. I don't reckon it was even a week. My left eye came good again, so I threw away the stick, but my right eye was permanently blind after that. But I could see with my left eye, but it gave me a lot of trouble. I couldn't see 100% with my left eye. So that's Dad's recollection of, you know, what happened soon after that fallout of when that EMU test went off in 53, rolled over Waiatata and fell over the main camp. And there are many stories that you hear from those old women who, the first slide I showed you, talk about those stories, and we're still scarred from that as well. To this day, people are still feeling the impacts of those tests that happened, not only EMU, but also Marilyngu, as we've been hearing the stories this morning as well. You know, the classic shot, the mushroom clouds, and you know, what's left there, telling us the story, even South Australia's history, when you look at those two locations there, where deposits are, where Adelaide is and where waste gets transported, you know, it's just a real worry of our South Australian history, but it's amazing how this history is sometimes forgotten. And I think we've heard today that, you know, it's not very many people know of EMU, not very many people know of Maralinga as well, which is worrying. And I think the job that we, whether it's through arts or through oral history, need to continue to share that as well. These amazing women, of course, leaders in their own right, talking about their knowledge of country, talking up about Wabba, their stories, ancestral stories, were really true leaders. These were women who were exposed by EMU and Maralinga and had that first-hand experience. They took a lot of things, you know, the responsibilities, very seriously towards the land and country. Some of those very special places, we know them, the Jukurba, the Wabba, which are our ancestral stories, and they're important stories of the land, the songs that, you know, prove how the land is and how it's created through stories, the Inma, song and dance of the culture, all part of the land as well. The bush tucker that we know and do our best to teach the grandchildren and even tourists when they come and visit and take the chance to, you know, sit down and learn from us as well. they take their responsibilities on preserving the traditional tools and making of tools, like the wera, wana, bunu, bali, and all these tools that people used a long time ago, and some still today as well, that has been handed down through our oral history from generation to generation. The language as well, I'm very blessed that I can speak my Yatwagatawanga because of these elders, and of course mum and dad were both interpreters as well. So I'm very grateful to be able to get those stories out, and I think that's when I got on board with Nana Mob's campaign, because Nana asked me to be a messenger to help to get her story out. As a first speaker of Yatwagata, she needed to speak in Yatwagata to get her story out, and I was able to help in getting those stories out for her. But also, you know, the family, that members have respect for one another as well, which is something really strong for Nana and those amazing old women as well through that whole Eat 80 Wonder campaign. So much respect and learning from them, but also the fact that one of the big messages I took from the Eat 80 Wonder campaign was the fact Nana was not only worried about her family and her generation, she was worried for everybody, so that was non-Aboriginal people, truck drivers who were going to be possibly transporting the waste, people who might be working there at the facility as well. You know, it wasn't just an animal issue, it was an issue that was for everybody, and both animal and non-Aboriginal people needed to know the story and stand strong with us as well, and they did that. Ironically, Nana was awarded the Goldman Prize as well, along with the late Eileen Wanni Winfield as well. Those two ladies were really key drivers in the Eat 80 Wonder campaign, and you know, was acknowledged internationally for this environmental award and you know, all that amazing work that they did. But of course, you know, it was certainly done with a team effort, and I think Nana recognises that. She acknowledged it. She was very grateful for the Melbourne Goombas and, you know, all the support that they had received. And, you know, many of you are in the room here who back those old ladies, you know, to where we are winners. And even at that political point too, where they were able to influence South Australia and get the backing of Mike Grant to put in that legislation and to really, you know, ground something strong for us in South Australia, which, you know, you kind of hear now in the grapevines that there's talk of wanting to make changes now to our Prohibition Act, which was something really strong that came out of this Eat 80 Wonder campaign as well. Of course, then another fight that we had to take on was the Royal Commission, another Royal Commission. The one, you know, Dad had won and spoke about very strongly, to talk about that those traditional lands back then was used for hunting and gathering. Again, in this Royal Commission, we needed to speak up really strong as well. Kevin Scarce and, of course, Jay, a Labor Premier as well, for some reason decided to call a Royal Commission. I remember Rose, my older sister, saying to me, I don't think I've got the energy to fight this. And we kind of channeled Nana and we talked to Dad. We got a lot of advice from that old man. And we kind of said, okay, let's tag team on this one. let's really work together and reach out to our community. And we did a lot of that, talking to our Yatwagatawanga community, and really became a bit of a pain in the backside to the government to let them know and remind them that our lands are important to us as animal people as well. And of course, you know, the terms of reference was looking at the mining and further processing, electricity generation, and you know, all of that, but we all later found out that it was all to do with storage. They were looking for a place to stick it in the ground. Still, it's on the agenda now, so it's, you know, an ongoing fight, it's a generational fight as well. But we did a lot of rallying, we certainly got together as groups and people, we held events, we opened the door and said come in and hear, because it was really one-sided story. When they went out, South Australian government went out, they were only hearing one side story. And it was really important to call on our support, like Jim Green coming on board, David Noonan coming on board, letting us know more information, building our relationships out there. We had to hear another side of the story as well, which was really important for us to make then an informed decision. And we said no. We'd always said no anyway. From the animal community, we've always said no, that we don't want to have nuclear because of our history. You know, you saw the map of Australia, two locations of testing. There's history there. We continue to fight this. And it's a generational thing. With my youngest, Larissa, on the left, and my other three trios, and my gang of four, are true little fighters. They come and they were dragged to every rally that we went to every little community event, you know, wearing our shirts, but also taking Papa's story, and that was really important for the kids to feel that they had some ownership to it. They owned it, and they want to rally with it. And you know, that they weren't disconnected, that they were very much a part of it. And that was that huge gathering that we had, goodness me, 2016. So time's moving very, very quickly. Another great photo of the gang as well, up the highway. Something as simple as that, just photographing us in our shirts as we journeyed up the highway back to Dad's country. Was really important. We posted them on Facebook, we got it out there and said, you know, not on, I think there was one shot I had of Larissa in that shirt that said, not on my Jamulwamura, which was not on my grandfather's country. So it was really important for us to continue those stories and the legacy of Nana and Dad, what they've shared and told us, but also continue on. You know, there's, goodness me, four generations there, myself, daughters there, and a little Nana as well. So my older sister Rose's little granddaughter Lucy May is sitting down there as well. So four generations of needing to continue on the story and fight the fight that you know, our leaders and elders have left before us, and we have to continue on to get those stories out as well. Important to gather. One of the big things in that Royal Commission was really gathering to get all our native title holders together and our Aboriginal animal voices together. It was really important that we had the support. So Goolwa the Mob came on board, Bungala Mob came on board, you had West Coast Mob on board. You look in the photo, you've had Kaurna people on board as well. It was really important for us to reach out to our Aboriginal community. And Yangwinetta really led that to say we need to get this gathering together. Another classic shot of a Goolwa, the traditional owner, Andrew Starkey, really hounding the commissioner at that time. But even a great event that we held, which was at the exhibition night, where we highlighted the Irrawaddy, and the book that's out there, Talking Straight Out, was really a beautiful collection of Nana Mob story, Nana Gabwada, and all those amazing women in the Irrawaddy campaign, to get their story out as well. And then finally, Jay saying that there is no foreseeable opportunity for this. So, you know, we thought, you know, it was great. We sent a strong message. We had to be painful to the state government, otherwise our voices wouldn't be heard. We even went through that whole Royal Commission time on a speed dating exercise with the Royal, with all the citizens' juries, where three Yangwinetta representatives, myself, Rose, and Simone Turr, credit to my sister girl who came on board as well, who really, it was quite daunting for us to have that experience. But strong black women got in that room and speed dated around every 10 minutes, chatting with a group of 10 people for, you know, for a good hour or so, which was really challenging, really, really challenging. And we were the only animal voice in that room at the time as well. Thanks, Noble Tillman. We had an amazing opportunity to travel to the Nuclear Victims Forum as well, again, taking the next generation to learn about this international, this global thing that impacts everybody. We found Papa there as well, so that Jesse Boylan classic shot. It was really lovely, and I feel really grateful that I was able to go there with my girls and continue that story and hear the stories that are so global as well, that impact on many people out there. A great little shot there. And the whole delegation of everybody that was there was really the eye lift of, and I guess the blinkers came off for me to realise that it was such a global issue, and it was really important for us back home at Wajidara, but also in the state of South Australia, to really continue on talking our story and sharing the story as well. Lots of gathering again, of course, with Black Mist, White Rain, sharing and getting word out. And again, that was another tag team I think both Rose and I did. Adelaide, and then I went off to Melbourne and she did Sydney and Canberra. So it was really important for us to continue on sharing Dad's story. The amazing opportunity to be a part of that UN treaty and to go and share the stories, not only Dad's story, but also the impacts on the Pacific region and how it's impacted on traditional owners for that area there, and a little bit of that statement that I read as well. But then, you know, the celebrations that we had at the Nobel Peace Prize, and you know, the whole campaign of Yes I Can. Rose and I couldn't make it overseas, but we certainly was welcomed there at Melbourne, where it all happened with I Can, and where the idea of, you know, getting this organisation up and running, and now it's a global, huge global network, which is really amazing, and been a really eye-opener experience for myself. And you know, again, the opportunity to take children, and Rose was there as well. It was really nice. One of the other things, just to end off on the presentation as well, was we joined the Peace Boat Voyage at the beginning of this year, which was something I asked Dad. I said, hey, we've got an invite from Peace Boat. You coming? He said, yep, I'm coming. I'm rolling my swag. I know, he said. And he was really determined to come, but we unfortunately, you know, lost Dad not so long ago. So we talked about it as a family and said, let's do it. I know it was a bit rough waters for us when we left Fremantle and got into Adelaide. So we had another family meeting to say we're going to ride these waves again. So the kids were certainly on board, and we finished the journey off in Sydney as well. But it was really important to take our animal voice and network with the people on the boat as well, and share those stories. And this is a great SA delegation. You can see people from SA there. You've got Kugler, the representatives, you've got Adjumut, the representatives, Aunty Sue Hasseldine's there, that's my eldest son, Joshy, with that beautiful jumper that he's got there, just at the front of the Peace Boat. So it was really important for us to get that story out. And meet amazing people, survivors of Hiroshima, survivors of Fukushima, the Hasegawas, who shared their story about how it's impacted with that fallout, and again, rallying and protesting. So let's ban that bomb. Thank you.